I'm Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Multiple ballots over multiple days, and now Kevin McCarthy is officially Speaker of the House. Details from CBS's Christina Ruffini.
For Kevin McCarthy, the 15th time was the charm. After a contentious and dramatic midnight vote.
McCarthy.
Following the first round of the evening, two of McCarthy's loudest Gates. Republican critics, Florida's present. Matt Gaetz and Colorado's Lauren Boebert, voted present, both refusing to give McCarthy the one vote he needed to grab the gavel. Frustrations boiled over into a physical altercation, with Alabama Republican Mike Rogers appearing to lunge towards Gaetz as a colleague held him back.
How much more can it take? Well, we're about to find out as California faces more storms this weekend. CBS's Mara Rubin reports.
Three more storms are threatening to bring heavy rainfall, mountain snow, and damaging winds to the West Coast. Diana Cross-Palaya with California's Office of Emergency Services says dangerous surf continues to pound the coast.
This kind of hurricane-type weather, high winds, lots of rain, and high surf is really concerning for parts of California.
And she's worried the weather system could exacerbate flooding after a deadly winter storm flooded streets and caused mudslides.
The Food and Drug Administration has approved a drug that treats Alzheimer's disease. CBS's Jeff Glore has the story.
Leqembi has been shown to slow memory loss in patients with mild or early cases of dementia. However, the delay in cognitive decline brought about by the drug likely only amounts to a few months. The drug also has possible side effects, including brain swelling and bleeding. It was approved on the FDA's accelerated pathway, which allows drugs to launch based only on early test results.
Doctors treating Buffalo Bills player DeMar Hamlin say he's awake, he's breathing on his own, and he's talking to his teammates. Bills player Deion Dawkins spoke to reporters about Hamlin's remarkable road to recovery.
We got our boy. The excitement was beautiful. It was amazing. It has given us so much energy, so much, you know, bright, high spirits, whatever you want to call it, it is giving it to us.
Hamlin suffered cardiac arrest and collapsed on the field during Monday night's game. No winner in last night's Mega Millions drawing.
Our first winning number tonight is 20. That's followed by 63. Up next we have...
The estimated jackpot in last night's drawing was $940 million. But since no one won, the lottery prize has grown to an estimated $1.1 billion. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual and...
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Kalata of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you'll seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy-efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUK Radio.
Morning Cannolis with James Centel is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is our weekend review once again of the important stories in law, in government, and yes, the aspiration for justice in the United States of America. Thank you so much for joining me on this Saturday morning. Delighted to have you with me. I'm also here in the studios of WAUK Radio in downtown Waukesha with my wonderful producer, Kelvin. And together, we're going to take your phone calls, as always, at 844-967-2789. Delighted all the time to have your comments, your questions, your observations about the important stories that we're talking about every single Saturday morning. This hour and next hour, as always, as we look at those things in government, in law, and yes, the aspiration for justice in America, we have, as always, an ambitious but achievable, very much achievable syllabus this morning. We're chatting about a number of different things, both inside Washington and then also outside Washington. We're going to begin with some commentary on what happened on the United States Capitol just last night and how that implies a lot of issues related to law and the practice of our government, even this morning after, finally, the election, the selection by the House of Representatives of a speaker of that body of Congress. Beyond that, we're going to be chatting, of course, about January 6th, one day after the two-year anniversary of the insurrection, the riot on our Capitol building in Washington, D.C. I'm going to talk a little bit about how the President of the United States of America observed that solemn event and recognized some people who were fundamentally major important role in defending our democracy on that day. Talk about that again, the implications of the legal aspects of that. And then also talking about some of the other cases pending in the federal and state courts in America related to January 6th. Beyond that, lots of issues related to matters outside of Washington, D.C., including other major stories of this past week. The individual who is arrested for, now charged with the murders of those four students at the University of Idaho. We're going to talk about some things coming out of the affidavit released in support of the prosecution of him. We're going to talk about the charges against those folks who attacked and disabled the generators in Washington, the state of Washington, over the holidays. And also talking about what happened in that major academic fraud case of just this past week, the sentencing of one of the major players in that. All of this on Morning Cannolis, once again, our sampling of the news desserts of the week, inviting your comments, your questions, your observations. As always, again, thank you for joining me here on our Saturday morning program, both 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. 2 hours with you this morning, as always. So let's jump right into the stories of recent times. I mentioned at the top of the hour here that we saw last night, very late last night, here in the central time zone, actually very early in the morning. If you happen to be on the East Coast, the selection finally, after 15 votes of the House of Representatives, the selection finally of a Speaker of the House of Representatives. This is the 118th Congress, the 118th Congress in our United States history since the time of the passage, the enactment of the Constitution of the United States of America. And that brings me to the importance, the legal importance of what happened last night. Lots of commentary throughout the week, lots of commentary to this day and in the days ahead about the politics of this. Lots of humor along the way in our public discourse. But it's actually a very serious matter, right? The selection of a Speaker of the House of Representatives, because as we've learned, and we have learned this from past history as well, the Speaker of the House of Representatives is the first and perhaps most significant thing that a House of Representatives does to get underway with its fundamental work. And so last night, with finally the selection, about 11:30 our time here in the Central Time Zone, 12:30 in the morning, by the time that all the speeches were concluded, including that of Hakeem Jeffries, who is now the minority leader of the Democrats in the House of Representatives, including that of the speech of the new speaker, Kevin McCarthy, all of that being completed in the very, very early morning hours here in America. Why is that significant? Well, again, we know that that's the seminal thing that has to happen in the United States Congress, the United States House of Representatives, to swear in all of the other 435 members of the House. And before that can happen, obviously the majority of the members of the House have to agree on that leadership, which they did. And in the wake of that, it is now, of course, that all the members can be sworn in. One can make, and some political observers, some legal observers have observed during the course of the week, that since the expiration of the 117th Congress and before the swearing in just late last night, very early this morning, of those 435 members, we did not have a House of Representatives. There was no one commissioned, no one properly under oath to pursue the all-important work of the House of Representatives, and that's my point this morning. We think about this as a political event, and it certainly is. It is good, regardless of one's politics, to have leadership because it provides an avenue, an open door for all of those other incredibly important things that the Congress, including the House of Representatives, is obliged to do under our Constitution. We are mindful this morning, in the wake of, again, this historic event early morning today, that Section 1, the very first sentence of our Constitution, following the preamble, the We the People preamble, the very first portion of Article 1, Section 1 says this: all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, and that shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. And again, it is by virtue of that language that the Congress can then engage in its activities. We know now, with the swearing in of all of those members, the beginning to identify who is going to sit on which committees, the beginning now, finally, of the introduction of legislation, which starts from the beginning in the 118th Congress. And to that point, the reason why this is not just a political issue, not just something for social commentators to talk about, but it is a legal issue as well, because of what the Constitution says about what the House of Representatives, along with the Senate, does. They legislate for us. And as we have spoken in the past, that legislation basically partakes of two fundamental roles. Number one, at the top of the list, passing laws that govern how we live in America. And remember again that the Senate and the House of Representatives commissioned to do a huge number of things in the very language of our Constitution. I'm going to cite some of those, not all of them, but just a few of those in Section 8, once again, of the very first article of our Constitution. The Congress has the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. We know that that's a critical function All tax bills, all budgets begin in the House of Representatives. Yes, with the House Ways and Means Committee, very much in the news in recent times because of the success of that committee finally after many years of obtaining the former president's tax returns. We have chatted about that on this very broadcast. This huge issue related to the operation of government premised upon the authority to pass a budget, to lay taxes and duties. We know as well that sometime in this calendar year, in 2023, probably in the third quarter, we also have a debt ceiling issue to address, probably this coming summer. Incredibly important to address that, because if that doesn't happen, the United States of America defaults on its obligations, brings our nation, if you will, by virtue of the default, to a halt. And operationally, again, a hugely critical thing to understand under the Constitution. What else? To borrow money on the credit of the United States of America, to regulate commerce with foreign nations, to establish the rules of naturalization. Again, a great challenge in recent times. We have not had major legislation in the naturalization area in well over a quarter century. Hugely needed, again, as the news of these recent weeks has underscored. The Congress obliged to and does routinely direct the coining of money, the establishing the value of that, providing for the punishment of counterfeiting, establishing post office and post roads, as the Congress has said, by virtue of its legislation, to promote the progress and the science of useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors. That's intellectual property. It's right there in the Constitution. To constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. We've talked a lot about that here on this program. That notion that this Congress, by virtue of the House of Representatives and the United States Senate, that establishes not the Supreme Court, that's by virtue of the Constitution, but does indeed establish the number of justices on the Supreme Court and establishes all of the 13 lower appellate courts in this country, establishes all of the district courts, including those right here in Wisconsin, in the Eastern and Western districts. That's all a legislative responsibility in the first article of the Constitution. To define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, very important to declare war. We forget that sometimes, that that's the obligation of the United States Congress, to declare war in situations where there has been debate, and the Congress does that by virtue of its authority in the Constitution to raise and support armies, to maintain a navy, to provide for the rules of government and regulation of our naval forces as well. And perhaps most important, between all of those critically important things, the language of the Constitution, the reason why the selection of leadership is so incredibly important, the Congress itself is obliged under the Constitution to do this, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper, that necessary and proper cause for carrying into execution all of those foregoing powers and all other powers, the Constitution goes on to say, vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States of America or in any department or officer thereof. This omnibus conveyance, this commission in the Constitution itself to do what needs to be done to ensure that all of the laws that are passed are executed, that necessary and proper cause used on a regular basis, not only as the basis for legitimate legislative action, but also as courts review all of this in this exercise of their authority, executing all the former powers in the Constitution of the United States of America. That is the law of America. That's the Constitution. And that's why what happened in the early morning hours of late last night is so very important. Come back. We're going to talk about a few other things in history on this day as we move then to think about what happened 2 years ago yesterday on January 6th. Stay with us right here on Morning Cannolis, a review of law, government, and justice in America. It's not
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underlie said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A mix of clouds and sun this afternoon with a high of 33. Northeasterly winds around 5 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies again tonight. Lows dip down to about 22. Mainly cloudy skies tomorrow. Highs level off around 34. Partly cloudy skies Monday. Clouds on the increase by Tuesday. Highs in the upper 30s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 21 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back. This is the first hour this Saturday morning of Morning Cannolis, a broadcast of Civic Media. We're coming to you live from the studios of WAUK Radio in downtown Waukesha. Delighted to be with you this morning. Thank you for letting me into your homes, your offices, your cars, as we talk again this morning, as we always do, about the big issues in justice, in government, and law. Right before the break, we were chatting about the significance, the legal significance, the important governmental operations significance of the finally, the decision by the House of Representatives to select a speaker, regardless of one's views about the political landscape that is out there, and the decision by the House of Representatives to select Kevin McCarthy. The reality is that that significant movement was the predicate for all the other things that have got to happen now to ensure that the Congress, which is identified, articulated in this very first, the very first piece of language in our Constitution, Article 1, that it can operate and it can now go ahead to do all those things, anticipating certainly in the 118th Congress a lot of dispute, a lot of disagreement about legislation passed, but nonetheless important to ensure that our government is in place and the Constitution is enacted. Chatted right before the break about some other significant things happening in history on this time. I'm going to visit those right now and then also talk about the very significant thing that happened 2 years ago yesterday, 2 years ago today, in the wake of the riot, the insurrection of January 6th. All of America still reeling in the wake of that attack. And we're going to talk more about what happened just yesterday by the president and in some courts related to January 6th. Before we get that, however, let's talk about a few of the things that happened also in history on this day, way back in 1610. Galileo Galilei was the first person, the first scientist, as we know, an artist also, a Renaissance man, to observe the moons of Jupiter, Ganymede and Callisto and Io and Europa, 1610. 1927, on this day in history, January 7th, 1927, the first transatlantic phone call was made on this day. 1953, after the Second World War, Harry Truman, announced the actual development of a hydrogen bomb by our scientists. 1999, on this day in history, was the day that the impeachment trial of Bill Clinton began. We know that that was premised upon his lies, his perjury, if you will, about what happened in connection with the affair that he was having with Monica Lewinsky. Still debate on whether or not that is an appropriate basis for the impeachment and the trial of a president. Nonetheless, as you know, he went on to be acquitted in the Senate for the charges that were brought against him by the House of Representatives. 2015, a very sobering event on this day in history. Two terrorists were killed, 12 people at the French magazine Charlie Hebdo. You recall that well in Paris. Horrific event, terrorist activity on 2015. And yes, it was on 2021, just a couple of years ago, that a man named Elon Musk, much in the news to this day, overtook Jeff Bezos as the richest man on the face of the planet, a net worth of about $186 billion at that time. Both of them plainly continue to animate many of our stories, including legal stories out there in America. Most importantly, we observed just this past week, solemnly, with great reverence, the two-year anniversary of the January 6th attack on our United States Capitol, attack on our democracy and on our republic. We have spent a lot of time talking about what has happened in the wake of that, including the prosecution by the United States Department of Justice of now well over 900 people responsible for actually being there and attacking the Capitol at the time. We're going to talk again in just a few moments about some of the continuing litigation, some of the prosecutions that have been concluded of mid-level supervisors, of the Proud Boys and others who are responsible for that kind of activity, the Oath Keepers as well. And we're also going to chat then about other things related to the January 6th report in future broadcasts. We've spent a lot of time in recent broadcasts talking about the findings there, referrals made by the House Select Committee of crimes that they believe that the former president committed and that the United States Department of Justice should prosecute under Jack Smith, who is the special counsel. But yesterday, very significant that our president, President Biden, honored who he's called 14 extraordinary Americans who defended our democracy on January 6th. He honored 14 people who, as he said, stood against election denialism in 2020, fought that violent mob at the Capitol 2 years ago, and he told them in a White House ceremony just yesterday, told the entire country, the entire world, that history, he said, will remember your names, remember your courage, and remember your bravery. And so this morning, in good bookend to what we have talked about before, the January 6th report, prosecutions coming out of that, continuing even this past week, I'm going to spend a little bit of time chatting about those people specifically identified by the president for having been involved in this very important legal position, in this position of defending America and democracy and ensuring that the Constitution that we have talked about this morning is in place. He was speaking from the East Room of the White House yesterday. He granted these presidential citizens medals to 9 police officers, significantly 3 of them who died after protecting the Capitol on January 6th. He also gave 5 local officials who were subjected to personal violence as a result of January 6th, but nonetheless, as he said, resisted the pressure to undermine the election. He said the individuals represented, again, this extraordinary activity, service to the country, helped thwart the efforts of former President Trump and his allies to keep him in power. He said this specifically. The president said, a violent mob of insurrectionists assaulted law enforcement, vandalized sacred halls, hunted down elected officials, all for the purpose of attempting to overthrow the will of the people and usurp the peaceful transfer of power. The president went on to say just yesterday, all of it was fueled by lies about the 2020 election. But on this day, 2 years ago, our democracy held because we the people, as the Constitution referred to us, we the people did not flinch. Went on to talk about the things that these people did in particular. And so his very important issues, I'm going to...
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. It took 15 tries, but Kevin McCarthy has become the new Speaker of the House.
If there's one thing I want the country to hopefully learn about me this week is that I will never give up. That means I'll never give up for you, that we will continue to fight for you to make sure we follow through on the commitment to America.
McCarthy was able to prevail after giving many concessions to opponents within his own party. Mother Nature is giving up nothing in California.
Another foot of rain on the way around San Francisco Bay right through Tuesday. We've got flood watches already in place for much of California.
Kelly Cass at the Weather Channel. The FDA has green-lighted a second new drug to treat Alzheimer's.
Clinical trials suggest Leqembi could slow cognitive decline by 27% over more than a year of frequent infusions. But like the first drug in this class, Aduhelm, which was cleared last year, some doctors had called for more studies.
CBS's Alexander Tin. CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Wasn't reminded of Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Wasn't reminded of Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind, like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
We are back. We are talking in this segment of our Saturday morning broadcast about a very significant thing that happened yesterday in Washington, D.C. President of the United States of America, Joseph Biden, recognizing what he called these 14 extraordinary Americans who defended our democracy, defended our capacity to live in America, understanding the significance of our Constitution, the laws under it. He identified, again, a number of law enforcement officials. That included Daniel Hodges, a Washington police officer who was injured during his first visit to the Capitol for his bravery amid this chaos. He was sprayed with poison. He was pinned and crushed. His eyes were almost gouged out Mr. Biden commended him. Also commended Michael Fanone. You probably have seen his image as well. He was a Capitol Police officer who was beaten, not just pushed around, beaten, the president said, defended our democracy with absolute courage. Mr. Fanone has also written a book, also spoken dramatically about his experiences on that day, being tased by his own taser and experiencing a heart attack as a result of that. The president also paid tribute to Caroline Edwards. She was the first law enforcement officer who was injured by the rioters. She was knocked unconscious, but got back up and helped preserve the line against those rioters as they were coming into the United States Capitol. Recognized Harry Dunn, a Capitol Police officer who faced racial slurs and harassment. A fellow named Aquilino Gunnell, a sergeant with the Capitol Police, was also injured brutally in the attack. Eugene Goodman, a Capitol Police officer who led a pro-Trump mob away from the entrance to the Senate chamber. You may recall that particular video. Certainly saving lives, certainly saving others from injury. The three officers that the president honored on Friday who died after January 6th include Brian Sicknick. He was a Capitol Police officer, you may recall. He died of a stroke a day after the attacks. I'm going to talk about him again in just a moment or so. Howard Liebengood, who died by suicide 3 days after the attack. And Jeffrey Smith, a Metropolitan Police officer who died also by suicide after helping to protect the Capitol. Beyond those law enforcement recognitions, also recognizing some local officials, again, with these very important Presidential Citizens Medals just yesterday. Two of those local officials, Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss, a mother and daughter, may recall them also from testimony before the House Committee, received the awards for serving as poll workers in Atlanta. They were in those positions subjected to all sorts of abuse by Trump supporters who falsely accused them of participating in election fraud. They were doing their job, as the president said yesterday. They were targeted and threatened by the same peddlers of a lie that was fueling the insurrection. The president also praised Al Schmidt, a city commissioner on the Philadelphia County Board of Elections in 2020, saying that he did not bend, he did not bow, he did not yield to the political threats and pressure. Also recognized Jocelyn Benson, who served as the Secretary of State, the state of Michigan during the 2020 election, and Rusty Bowers, the Republican House Speaker in Arizona, the State House in Arizona, all of those likewise resisting pressure from those forces that were seeking to overturn the election. All of them, Mr. Biden describing as true leaders in our nation. In the end, President Biden said, "We're not a land of kings and dictators, autocrats and extremists. As we see in today's honorees, we are a nation of people. We are toughened through our fiber. We're renewed in our faith and strengthened in our cause. There's nothing," the president said, "beyond our capacity if we act together." Again, important this morning to recognize what happened just yesterday, not only in observance of the two-year anniversary of January 6th, because that too is a legal matter commemorating not only the event that happened and the results of that in our courts and outside of our courts, but ensuring that America and all of history knows about those people who came forth to protect our Constitution, to protect our laws, to protect our way of life, to protect our republic. Let's go into at least one of those courts. This also happened, as it turned out, on the very two-year anniversary of January 6th, the second anniversary of the riot. One of the first rioters to enter the U.S. Capitol on that day was sentenced to 46 months behind bars. His name, again, just sentenced yesterday in the federal district court, his name, Jared Wade Hughes. He pleaded guilty back in August to obstructing official proceedings. And according to the plea agreement that he did, in fact, enter into, he was the eighth rioter, the only eighth person to enter the Capitol on that day. He climbed through a broken window, helped another rioter kick open the Senate wing door, also allowed other people to enter from the mob entering into the Capitol. It was the first major breach of the building. According to prosecutors, Hughes texted others after the Capitol attack saying that if they had more in the mob, they could have held the building. Just a chilling account of what he did. The prosecutors said we would have been in a constitutional crisis if what had happened continued and if Hughes had been even more successful in doing what he did. plainly stayed off by the kinds of people the president recognized yesterday. Hughes yesterday appearing in front of District Judge Timothy Kelly in the District of Columbia, again, a federal district court judge. That judge said the events of January were a national disgrace. January 6th, a national disgrace. He noted as well during the course of his sentencing of Hughes that the mob snapped our previously unbroken tradition of a peaceful transfer of power. We can't get that back, the judge said. He went on to say, it's hard not to become numb to it now after 2 years, not to let it, as time goes, not to let the seriousness of it wear off at all. Those comments all by District Judge Timothy Kelly as a result of his sentencing of Hughes, again, one of the major perpetrators, one of the initial people into the Capitol building at that time. His counsel, of course, was indicating that he didn't quite understand. Hughes didn't quite understand what was going on at the time. Specifically, Hughes said during the course of the sentencing, I want to get this behind me and get back to my family. Now, he said, he apologized to my country, my Congress, police officers, and specifically to Officer Goodman, again, recognized just yesterday by the president. Hughes' brother Joshua, who drove up with Hughes and was with him during the attack, was sentenced on November, to 38 months behind bars. Brother is now in prison in the federal district courts, by the federal district courts in federal prison for their involvement in the January 6th insurrection. So again, another piece of litigation, another piece of prosecution coming to an end among those, again, we're approaching 1,000 people prosecuted for their on-site involvement in January 6th. And then we've got more civil litigation against the president for inciting, for encouraging the very riot that happened. This is civil litigation, not being brought by the Department of Justice, but by private individuals who are maintaining in their lawsuits that because of what the president did, as Liz Cheney said, sort of lighting the fire, if you will, bringing the mob to Washington, D.C., causing this to happen. There were injuries and deaths caused in particular. We talked just a few moments ago about the recognition for the family of Brian Sicknick, who died just a day after the attack on the Capitol. Well, just this past week, the partner of Brian Sicknick, her name is Sandra Garza. She was his girlfriend of this fallen officer. He died again following that January 6th riot, suing Donald Trump and other defendants, two other defendants, charging them with their insurrection involvement, enticing people to do exactly what happened, enticing all of that activity. Sandra Garza, in her lawsuit, again, representing the estate of Sicknick, accusing the former president in her lawsuit, along with two others, Julian Cotter and George Tanios, of being, this is directly from the complaint, directly and vicariously liable for Sicknick's death. The suit was filed in Washington, D.C. on Thursday. Garza said in that civil complaint that the officer's death, again, her former partner's death, was a result of the defendant's intentional words and actions, including Trump's inciting his supporters to storm the Capitol in support of his false claims about the 2020 election. So that lawsuit underway. What about the other two? Well, Cotter had pleaded guilty previously to assaulting three officers on January 6th, including Sicknick. So this is an individual who had a particular engagement, a violent engagement with Sicknick, now deceased as a result of the January 6th event. One of the other two defendants in the lawsuit being brought. And beyond that, Tanios, who is said to have handed the chemical spray to Cotter during the course of the altercation, the disorder. He also pleaded guilty in July to several offenses, including, among other things, the assault on a federal officer, of course, that is Sicknick, with a dangerous weapon, and conspiracy to injure an officer. So the other two, again, named in this civil lawsuit in the District of Columbia, also previously having suffered criminal convictions in the federal district court, serving their sentences for that involvement. Again, significant because of the remedies available, again, by virtue of the federal code, permitting the former partner of Brian Sicknick, to bring a lawsuit for damages against those people who caused the death of Brian Sicknick and plainly the other injuries that she has suffered. The lawsuit goes on to say the horrific events of January 6th, including Officer Sicknick's tragic wrongful death, were a direct and foreseeable consequence of the defendant's unlawful actions. Again, that includes not only the former president, but also Cutter and Tanios. As such, the complaint goes on to say they are responsible for the injury and the destruction that followed. In that complaint, the lawsuit seeking $30 million in damages from the three of them over Sicknick's deaths. We know that the former president is also facing three separate lawsuits from other police officers, Brianna Kirkland, Marcus Moore, as well as a Metropolitan Police Department officer named Bobby Tabron, another one called named Divine Carter. All of them alleging in their lawsuits the president was similarly responsible for the January 6th attack and therefore the injuries that they suffered during the course of the violence. Importantly, in those previous lawsuits, probably going to follow up being brought in the lawsuit brought by Sandra Garza just this past week, this notion brought by the former president that he is somehow immune, he's got absolute immunity. That concept, again, being rejected in August in these other lawsuits. A district judge named Ahmed Mehta, we're going to hear about him in just a moment again. Ahmed Mehta rejected that attempt by the president to have those lawsuits thrown out by citing the claim that the president had absolute immunity, the judge's finding that there was no basis for that at all, and that his actions fell within his presidential duties. And he did this, again, as a part of his conduct on that day, resulting in those injuries. Similarly, way back in November, another district judge named Emmett Sullivan ruled that Trump cannot use the absolute immunity defense in a lawsuit brought forward by the NAACP and the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization. That lawsuit claimed that the former president and the RNC, the Republican National Committee, had committed some civil rights violations, again, by attempting to disenfranchise voters in the days after the 2020 election by means of perpetuating this false lie and ultimately, as the complaint in that case says, harassment, intimidation, preventing the complete counting and certification of valid ballots. In fairness, the former president says, I did nothing wrong. He says this in response to all of these civil lawsuits. He says, I have total immunity and continues to advance that discredited theory. All of those lawsuits, civil lawsuits going ahead by former police officers, current police officers, and members of their family, alleging that because of what the former president and others did on that day, they suffered death, they suffered other injuries. We'll continue to monitor what happens in those lawsuits and others. Other significant things coming out of January 6th, again, in the courts of our nation just this past week. We have talked at great length in the past about two of these major groups, the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, these large groups, these white supremacist national groups. This past week, the Proud Boys went on trial. Jury selection underway again in the federal district court in Washington, D.C., against members of the Proud Boys, including Enrique Terrio, who is the leader of that group. We know from previous proceedings that Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers, this other organization, previously found guilty. Now jury selection underway with respect to the Proud Boys, again, allegations of them of seditious of conspiracy. We'll talk more about that and talk more about other cases pending in our federal district courts right after this break.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden.
Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Partly cloudy skies this afternoon with a high of 33. Northeast winds around 5 miles an hour. Tonight, lows level off around 22. Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 34. Partly cloudy skies Monday. Clouds on the increase by Tuesday. Highs in the upper 30s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 21 degrees.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back. We are continuing to talk this morning on Morning Cannolis about January 6th. Yes, once again, things happening in our federal district courts, including the beginning this just this past week of the seditious conspiracy trial against Enrique Terrio and four of his lieutenants for their involvement, their seditious conspiracy to overthrow the government, to stop the counting of electoral votes on January 6th. Jury selection underway. We know that this group, like the Oath Keepers, they're subject of previous and, yes, forthcoming lawsuits, forthcoming prosecutions, a major, major group in terms of their attempts to undermine our republic. We know as well that in addition to the things that are alleged against the Proud Boys in this particular case, the Proud Boys have recently been involved in other things. They've disrupted storytelling sessions and other LGBT events around the country. Members have shown up at school board meetings and other local government forums, often to protest COVID-19 masking requirements. They joined anti-abortion protests surrounding the Supreme Court's overturning of the Roe versus Wade landmark case last year. None of that on trial in the trial going on now this week and into next week against Terrio and the other four. But nonetheless, a significant reflection of the extent to which groups like the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers and others out there are seeking to have an influence in many, many areas of our public discourse, our public engagement, our lives, and our livelihoods here in the United States of America. We will continue to monitor not only those prosecutions, likely resulting in convictions and ultimately sentences imposed upon these folks responsible for organizing conspiracies to overthrow our government. As always, we're thrilled to take your calls, your comments, your questions. And Joe, you've joined us this morning on the line from Madison. Glad to have you with us once again this morning, Joe.
Thanks, Jim. This is just so helpful. I really, really appreciate it. There are two questions, points I wanted to bring up. The first would be that there is this idea, certainly, that the prosecutions and the discovering of more and more information and ties is an ongoing process. 2 years in, you spoke of the fact that over 1,000, getting toward 1,000 people who have been charged. I would ask your opinion about two things. Number one, as we've been rolling forward in this last week or so, we found out more information about our own Republican Senator Ron Johnson and his role in terms of pushing forward and the idea of having the Wisconsin State Legislature choose our electors rather than the voters, and that information had been revealed from the January 6th testimony taken from Andrew Hitt to another Republican official, Mark Jefferson, over these plans that Johnson had called him to detail. My question to you is, this would seem to be interfering with the election, and I'm curious why there have been no charges for him, and even why there have not been any charges on either a state or local level. The Madison DA has not gone forward, Josh Call, our state attorney general. So my first question would be, do you think that they have not gone after Ron Johnson and others associated with this scheme with the electors on the state or local level because they're counting on the feds to investigate this and they don't want to muck up those particular cases? That would be my first question. And my second one is a bit more philosophical, if you will, and that is that you certainly have been following this for 2 years and providing us with, you know, just wonderful information in terms of, as you say, protecting our Constitution, protecting our government. I would be curious, with your background, 30 years as a prosecutor, veteran, and kind of an educator at this point with the show that you've got, and as a working attorney, you know, kind of what were your thoughts the first day when you were watching this, you know, on the TV monitors? What were your thoughts on the first day? And kind of compare and contrast, if you will, to what we see now in terms of where things are. So I hope that somewhere within the program that in addition to providing us this information, you can also provide your own opinions, which we really value. You don't often share, but we would really value, I think, in this particular day at this particular time. Thanks a lot, Jim. I appreciate it.
Joe, thank you. Wonderful comments, wonderful thoughts. And I'm going to seize upon both of those. If we don't get through all of it in this hour, we're going to do it in the start of the top of the next hour. Let me talk about this issue of our senior senator, again, getting this information just this past week as more revelations are coming forward. It struck me that this is also a part of what we've talked about on this broadcast in this case called Moore versus Harper, pending before the United States Supreme Court. If it is to be believed, and again, credible information out there about the attempt by our senior senator to have the state legislature become involved and basically rescind the decision of the population in the state of Wisconsin, changing our electoral votes here. That's basically the same predicate that is advancing this Moore versus Harper case pending in front of the United States Supreme Court, that somehow it's the state legislature that should decide it. So that was my first response when I saw that information, Joe, as you saw as well, that it is all a part of this same conspiracy, this same basically misguided and unfounded attempt to rob us of our own electoral force, our power as citizens of the United States of America. As to the specific question that you raised about possible prosecution, you're right. There has not been a focus at this level. The Department of Justice has plainly told us through Lisa Monaco, the deputy, and also the attorney general himself, Merrick Garland, that they are looking at high-level participants in this. I have to believe, again, I don't know for certain, that among their examination on the files generally that they're looking at would be the names of people like a senator who is involved somehow in attempting to overturn the election. We don't know what's going to happen there. We don't know what specifically someone like Jack Smith, the special counsel, is getting in terms of information, what kinds of testimony, whether this public information surfaced again this past week is in fact credible. Presumably, Jack Smith at a minimum would be looking at that and determining whether in the broad scope of all the people responsible for this in major ways, in minor ways, in ways in between, someone like our senior senator might also be in that mix. Conspiracies can be very large. They can be very small. You don't have to participate in every single aspect of a conspiracy. You don't have to know what other people in the conspiracy are doing to somehow be supportive of it and advancing it. And so without knowing more about what Jack Smith is doing right now, and we don't know, we shouldn't know under Rule 6 of the grand jury proceedings, we can certainly anticipate that his view right now, his examination is broad and would include this kind of thing, people who are at a higher level focusing on that sort of activity. As he goes forward, we will see. I think during this calendar year, sooner rather than later, there'll be the return of some indictments of people at the highest level. The attorney general has said once again that everyone is subject to law. No one is above the law. And I would anticipate, Joe and others, that fairly soon we're going to hear from our attorney general, from a grand jury, about charges broadly and very specifically in this case. As we go into our second hour, we're going to talk more about Joe's comments and also take at least other callers. Stay with us here on Morning Cannolis this morning, WAUK Radio.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council. What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.